Breakfast Business
with Enterprise Ireland
on Newstalk.
Good morning and welcome to Breakfast Business, and thank you to Shane Beattie. It is Monday, the 18th of August at 6:30. Coming up in today's show, we'll be talking about the business of grinds, and we'll be looking at AI and its impact on companies and all the markets as usual as they begin to digest the outcome of the Alaska Summit and today's summit in Washington. You can email us, business@newstalk.com. But first, let's have a look at the main international business stories in the newspapers and websites, which we shall do in the stupendous company of Russ Mould from AJ Bell. Good morning, Russ.
Good morning, TJ. Hope you had a good weekend.
We had a lovely weekend weather-wise. I went for a dip in the Irish Sea yesterday morning, and it was shockingly warm, actually.
Gosh, blimey, all right. I didn't know anything. I mean, I live very near the sea here in Brighton, but I didn't take a dip. I was too busy with the junior cricket program over the weekend.
Well, let us get straight into it and talk about the Chinese e-commerce giant Shein, or Shein. Yeah. There's going to be a new wave of Shein and Temu-type products hitting Europe, we suspect.
That's the possibility, and that's because of President Trump's tariffs, which are still 30% on Chinese goods, even as talks continue. And there's another 90-day delay in the imposition of further levies. And also, Trump's government is ending the de minimis tariff exemption for smaller packages with a value of less than $800. That really could clobber the providers of cheap, fast fashion, which is pretty low-ticket items. The suspicion is, therefore, if these firms can't ship to America, they're going to look for somewhere else to go, and Europe and the UK are therefore logical candidates. And we've just actually had the Shein numbers for the UK for 2024. Sales up by a third, profit up, although margins really, really, really skinny. It'll be interesting to see now if Shein does float on the stock exchange, either Hong Kong or UK, because that will give us some insight into those allegations, unproven and rejected, about labour practices, supply chain concerns, and we'll see. But at the moment, a lot of fashionistas don't like what they sell, but equally it serves a lot of pockets and helps a lot of people, so you pay your money, you take your choice.
Exactly. The margins must be absolutely flimsy. 1 or 2%, I'm sure.
Yes.
Yeah. Because some of the products that are delivered, whatever about the quality of the products, the pricing is so attractive to consumers. And there is an issue about whether, if you're shipping something from China, whether that is going to have a huge green footprint. That's something that the European Union certainly worries about. And they will especially worry if these really cheap products are now going to be even cheaper simply because those products were destined for the United States. Now, on the opposite end of cheap are shares in a company called Palantir. And they might now be the most overvalued shares of all time. First of all, explain what Palantir actually does.
Well, it's named after an indestructible crystal ball from the Lord of the Rings, an all-seeing eye. So that may give you a little bit of a clue as to what it does. It provides software for data integration and analysis. So it helps companies process vast amounts of information and then use it to form strategies, particularly in areas like government and particularly in defense. It provides a machine learning algorithm, and apparently Ukraine's been using it to make its drone strikes even more efficient against Russian military sites. And the US Department of Defense and the Pentagon are huge customers. Now, it's talking a lot about AI and data analysis, so that's caught Shell's imaginations. So if you want to know how expensive it is, the company's got a valuation on the American stock market of $420 billion. It's only got 4,000 staff. It's got sales a year of $4 billion and profits a year of $1 billion. Now, in crude terms, therefore, you're saying it's going to take me 420 years to get my money back if I buy the shares now. Now, that clearly isn't correct because investors are expecting this thing to grow incredibly quickly. But boy, is it going to have to grow quickly to justify that price tag. But at the moment, investors don't seem to mind because they think it's going to be one of the hottest areas for a very long time to come.
Now, the market, not just Palantir, but the Mag 7, the Magnificent 7, their price-earnings ratio is crazy. This market looks to me well overbought. What does it strike you as?
It feels very uncomfortable to me. It's got some very big echoes of 1998 to 2000 with the technology, media and telecoms bubble. But as I learned at the time then as an analyst in an investment bank, this thing can go on for an awful lot longer than you think. In the Nasdaq rocketed in 1997, 98, 99. we went bearish the Nasdaq and started telling customers and clients to sell in June 1999.
Just in time.
And the index then doubled, Joe.
Oh, God.
We nearly all got the sack. It doubled in the next 6 months, and then it collapsed.
Yeah.
So you could say...
March 2000, wasn't it?
Yep, but it doubled between June and March 2000, and we nearly all got fired.
Yeah.
So that's why I think you'll find a lot of analysts, no disrespect to me, it's a very hard job, are very happy to fail conventionally by going with the crowd than unconventionally by standing up and getting your head shot off.
Yeah, because the prices just go up and up and up. And then there's geopolitical risk goes on, and the Israel-Iran war, and prices have kept rising. It really does have echoes of 1999
The one thing that will do it in eventually is there'll be a major rush of copycat companies coming to market, and then once they've floated, there'll be a big rush of secondary deals, i.e. the owners selling out. And you've just seen actually a big slice of CoreWeave, another big AI company. The post-flotation lockup has expired, and the insiders are already heading for the exit. So that's the sort of thing. Bull markets run out when the money runs out, and the supply of shares outstrips the amount of money that's chasing that. We're nowhere near that yet, intriguingly.
And the other irony is that they're investing hundreds of billions of dollars in AI technology and data centers and all that kind of thing. So their share price is zooming up, but they're also spending like crazy. Now, let's move from stocks to bonds. The spread, i.e. the distance and the gap between Italian and French government bonds has really, really shrunk.
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of your listeners remember the word the spread, you know, with dread and fear and disgust.
Oh, bond yields, those two words scared a lot of Irish people.
After a decade ago, people were sick of hearing the relative cost of Irish debt was to other countries. Stock markets, for bond markets, happily provide borrowing to countries. The interest rate that they charge them is often struck relative to other countries, and it's on the basis of their political stability, their economic prospects, their inflation rate. And what's catching people's eye here is that you don't now have the Italy barely has to pay a premium to borrow relative to France, whereas in 2008, it was costing them 4 full percentage points more. Now the gap is zero. Why? Giorgia Meloni's government is stable. It's actually bringing the annual deficit down as a percentage of GDP. In France, you've got a wobbly government. After the Barnier government fell last year, Prime Minister Bayrou, his budget is not really striking a chord with the French. Every time they try and sort out their public finances, there's some strikes. And the debt to GDP ratio is still going up. So at the moment, Italy is seen, intriguingly, as almost as safe a bet as France. And I think if you are anybody who wants to still pick holds in the European Union project, France, intriguingly, may now be seen as one of the weaker links.
Yeah, unthinkable 15 years ago. Correct. When we used to refer to it as the pigs, Portugal, Ireland, Italy, Greece and Spain. Spain is now the fastest growing large country in the European Union. We know about Ireland, and now Italy suddenly is seen as a safe haven. Even the Greeks have got their public finances under certain control.
Yeah, I think the Greeks pay less to borrow than the British.
Wow.
which tells you a big step forward that the Greeks have taken, and also tells you some of the difficult decisions that the British Chancellor of the Exchequer, Finance Minister Rachel Reeves, has got to take here in the UK. And I know you'll all be hearing about this in Ireland this week if you've got the British racing industry going on strike over potential tax increases. So it's going to be a potentially pretty fractious second half of the year over here financially.
Yes, our friends in Off the Ball have been talking about that strike, and it'll be a big one for those people who love the GGs. And finally, the Information website reports on an interesting story about Meta's effort to recook their AI effort again.
Yeah, well, a fourth time in 6 months, apparently. So Mark Zuckerberg, the boss there, clearly isn't happy with the progress it's been making. He's coined this phrase, super intelligence, that he thinks Meta is driving. Remember, that his metaverse concept didn't really fly, so he's obviously determined
to make sure that... billions on that.
Well, this is the interesting thing. You've just talked about it. Meta is spending $70 billion in investment in data centers and things this year. That's all of its net profit. So it's taking a really, really big position here to try and get it right. They've had some staff defections, so they've been on a hiring spree. They're on this spending binge to try and make sure that they get this right. Because what's been fascinating about companies like Meta and Microsoft and Amazon.com is they've all been operating in their own little sort, well, their own very big area. Now, because of artificial intelligence, they're all starting to park on each other's lawn and try and get involved in other people's markets. So it's going to be a really interesting time for those companies. As you said in this bubble conversation we just had, they're all being priced as if they're all going to win, And that really doesn't feel right, even between themselves, let alone if some newbie comes up on the rails and sneaks them and gets past them, which technology history suggests is what could still happen.
Yeah, also it's pushing up prices. If you've got all this money chasing after pretty similar products, whether that's data center technology or energy storage, it's going to push up the prices for all of that, because the people that can deliver those projects will just say, well, I'll take Meta's bid, or I'll take Google's bid, or I'll take Palantir's bid. And that's the way it all ends up going south. Anyway, Russ, thank you so much. Have a wonderful week as usual. That is Russ Mould there from AJ Bell. Back.
Breakfast Business
with Enterprise Ireland
on News Talk.